Trump versus Putin. I want to see a fair fight, no low blows, no holding on. And you're ready to rumble.
Hello and welcome to the show, Colourful Conversations with Mark and Pete. Yes, this is the show dedicated to religion, politics and business. This week's show, Trump versus Putin, Diplomacy from Hell. Yes, well, indeed. Well, as we've seen in the G20 summit recently in Germany, Donald Trump actually hailed it a great success. Well, that was despite many divisions on many fronts. Yes, we saw in this particular forum leaders of 18 nations and the EU that recognized that the United States and indeed Russia were clearly going to cause them a lot of problems. It seemed there were deadlocks all over the place. Now, what do you do when you've got so many egos all in one place? Well, if you're a diplomat, my goodness, this must have been a nightmare. Well, with me today is Clergyman Pete. So, Clergyman Pete, with your diplomatic skills, what on earth would you have done if you had been conducting the G20 summit?
Yes, it's a tricky one. I think that the real answer, just to give you a serious answer, would have been to just put electrodes in everyone's seats. And if they don't give a good answer, then just zap them.
They may have enjoyed it.
Yeah. But yes, the thing is, I don't think there's any simple answer to what to do, because you've got different interests together. You've got a collection of huge egos. You know, you've got a group of people who manage to become the leaders of their respective countries. They're all there. So what you've got is a room full of leaders. And you know what they say? Too many kings spoil the broth.
Yes, I do believe that saying is something that you've just conjured, yes. What is interesting is that the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, actually hosted the summit. Yes. Now, certainly widely regarded on the political circuit as being an experienced politician, somebody who's very good at negotiations, brought together, let's be fair, some, as you say, some eminent individuals, perhaps not always seeing eye to eye. Now, it was actually believed that part of the problem was fueled by the controversy over Donald Trump's strange policy of removing himself from some of the global climate discussions, and certainly withdrawing the US from certain conditions. Now, I know that was only one aspect. There's also the issue over warfare, because, of course, obviously, if we look at the Syria situation, Mr. Putin, on the other hand, if we look at his corners, clearly, for some reason, got some ulterior motives in terms of what he's doing in that arena. And that it certainly is causing angst with the West. But it doesn't just end there. Of course, Mr. Putin is isolated a little bit here, particularly with some business sanctions. So I guess the question here is if you were, let's take each of the corners as you sort of set it up at the beginning of this program. On the one hand, you've got, say, Donald Trump, very much a leader of one of the world's largest industrial nations, a powerful empire without any doubt, influencing the world on many fronts. But of course, you can't ignore the influence of Vladimir Putin. And of course, he's been negotiating recently with China. So of course, that's put him in a stronger position. So if you were in, say, for example, Vladimir Putin's corner, how would you go about tackling the West on some of their policies to alienate him from the world's trade negotiations?
Well, here's how he has been doing it. He's basically just trying to keep the pipeline working, isn't he? Because as long as you have the gas pipeline, and then you know the natural resources of Russia are really the only thing that makes him an important world figure, that gives him enough money to have enough clout in the world. So he's sort of a superpower. There's a reasonable number of people. They're very well developed economy, developed in terms of their weaponry, and of course have a nuclear arsenal. So he's a big player because he can afford to support that. If that were to be stopped, well, it wouldn't be wouldn't work out so well for him. So he needs to have in place a certain amount of control over certain areas in the world. But he doesn't care about being friendly with anyone. You know, I mean, he's not trying to do that. Now, that's Putin's position. And I think we can trace his attempts to interfere in politics in various countries. And it's quite clear, really, that he is happy to see, not happy, but it doesn't affect him to see the rest of Europe, accounting because, you know, the capital of Russia is in Europe, see the rest of Europe go under because of its stupid immigration policies. It's and also its terrible economic policies. But I mean, that doesn't affect him. That's not an issue for him. An issue for him is to keep the various countries where he has an interest under control. Now, in terms of the US involvement, he would have expected and would have been happy for Clinton to win. If he interfered at all to try and get a certain result, he would have wanted a weakened Hillary Clinton. Certainly wouldn't have wanted Trump.
Well,
so I what I was going to say is into a Trump meeting, I would say very nervous. And in fact, he looked nervous. Because the one thing about Trump that we can say, the one thing that's reliable is that he's unreliable. You just don't know what he's going to do. So I think now, Putin is nervous of Trump because he just doesn't know what he's going to do.
Well, in taking that on board, because it has been widely sort of written that allegedly that Putin, not as an individual, but certainly oversaw some of the cyber attacks that took place last year during the US presidential election, which, of course, as we now know, Donald Trump won. But, of course, many of Donald Trump's adversaries claim that it was down to the influence of some of the Russian hackers. So if that were to be the case, is it, and let's take one assumption, let's say that they did have an involvement, to what extent they influenced the American public, that's open for debate. But let's say that they did have an involvement. Are we saying now that perhaps that Putin may regret choice of candidate that he's now got opposite him? What would you say there?
Well, I say I can see no evidence, and I can't imagine a scenario where Putin would have wanted Trump to win. I can't see that to be the case at all. It does seem, I think, that they did interfere. What they were trying to do was undermine confidence in the process. There were attempts to hack the Republican Party's computers, which failed because they had proper systems in place. And then they succeed in getting into the Democratic parties, and all they managed to do, if it were them that did it, we don't know that at all, because the Democratic Party has never handed over their servers to the FBI to be looked at, so it may just not have happened. Mm. But if it did happen, then all that was revealed was the actual writings of people in the Democratic Party. So that helps democracy. So I think it backfired. So if it did happen, I think they do think it's backfired in that what's happened is the democratic view, the democratic results of the American people were carried out. I mean, overall, people wanted Trump and they got him, whether or not you like him or not. But I think Putin, it's not that he doesn't like him, it's just that he's nervous of him. He's got to be careful because he doesn't know what's going to happen.
He should be nervous on another front, which is that America has been pretty clever, I think, in terms of building relationships, not just with Europe, but also during the talks. Trump held talks, of course, during the event with the Chinese president, Xi Jinping. Now, of course, this was over North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Now, this starts to get a lot of diplomats scuttling around corridors, desperate to try and hold ground and see where this one's going to unfold. So it's very clear that the US president told his Chinese counterpart that something has to be done. Now, to your point, Trump isn't an easy character to read here. Will he take action over, say, for example, North Korea's efforts to empower themselves with more weaponry, particularly on the nuclear front? And, of course, if that were to be the case, why is it that China, for goodness sake, are still not putting any kind of embargoes on North Korea? Because you would have thought that, you know, if they were also against nuclear weapons, North Korea is only going one way, and that is to have more nuclear weapons. So I'm trying to sort of understand China's position here. If you're sat there around the table and the next point on the agenda is nuclear armament, there must have been a lot of bum shuffling, I would have thought, on all fronts.
Think so. And I think, the possibility of Trump aligning with Russia rather than China will give them pause for thought as well.
Yes.
So, I think... Yeah. It seems to me, and this is one of the strangest things, if we're talking about diplomacy, I didn't think that this would be the case. It looks like Trump is being very successful, very clever, a foreign policy president. He appeared to know nothing, I mean absolutely nothing, about international politics during his primary campaign. He's obviously just taking advice, learning very quickly, and he just seems to be playing the game well. That's what I would say. And I think he seems to be outplaying people. You talked earlier about the laughable Paris Accord, which is just a very silly thing, particularly from the Americans' point of view, to sign up to, because it ends up punishing America giving a free rein to certain economies to get ahead of them. Economically, just doesn't make sense. I think Trump...
Like Turkey, for example.
Yeah. What it did was it allowed what they call developing nations to do as much polluting as you want, and then basically holding back American industry by sticking restrictions, carbon tax, on what they're doing. So Trump, in opting out of that, he's making a very wise decision. I mean, even if you believe that such a thing is needed, and I think actually it should be more about, as we've talked about on Mark and Pete before, the concentration should be on reducing pollution, not when global warming isn't as big an issue as people make out. But the act of pulling out of that particular non-binding accord, what is an accord? What on earth does that mean? It's just meaningless apart from it to put America at a disadvantage. He's been very wise in doing that, while still saying, of course, we might come back in at any moment. So, he's played it very, very well, I think. So in diplomatic terms, the experienced politicians seem to have been side-footed by a businessman celebrity. I bet they're feeling really
well,
stupid.
I must admit that this is a man who just cannot read. He must be great at playing poker, I would have thought, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Look, if he'd been a poker player, he could have been really rich by...
Possibly. What a card he would be, and he's certainly playing a very interesting game. I mean, you talked about emissions and etc., but I must say that some of the political rhetoric and that seems to come out seems to fuel the air with some strange and rather pungent sort of policies that I don't think that really seem to be getting us anywhere. I mean, the G20 summit really is the aim, ultimately, I guess, to try and come to some form of diplomatic agreement. But I don't know. I think, taking your point, I think that Donald Trump is reveling in the controversy over this. He seems to be a man that seems to just like the attention. So that's on one front, but he certainly doesn't shy away from controversy or argument. And because you can't read him, and when I take a good example here, I thought at the beginning of the year, when Theresa May, who was one of the first international leaders to meet him, I thought, well, maybe he's building a rapport. And now I sort of realize that, no, there isn't there's no established relationship yet with him. There isn't any country that I can safely say really knows where he's going. I mean, is this a game that he's playing? Is it deliberate, or is it just that he doesn't know? He wakes up the next morning. I'm going to do something different.
Well, that's the question. I mean, of course, I really don't know, because he is so difficult to read. But what I think, this is what I think is the case, on many different areas, he has no real fixed view. He hasn't really thought about it in the past at all. But there are certain things, certain areas, particularly in economic policy, where he thinks he knows, and that he's very firm on. You know, the certain things he thinks,
yes,
this we have to do, we're going to do it. Cutting regulations is one of them. And I think he's very wise to do so. And putting America first, which to him includes some sort of tariff system, which I think he's wrong, but
yes,
to him that's very important. But on other areas, he's very flexible because he simply doesn't know. It's interesting that he, in terms of diplomacy,
that's obvious.
He's happy, you know, to get on with diplomacy and the talking and the backslapping and the chatting. And it seems to me that this is another one of his strengths, you know, the other one being him not, you know, just being difficult to read, possibly because he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he, in the sort of situation where you see him with the other world leaders in front of the cameras, he comes across very well. If an alien or someone from outside were to come and see this group of people, the G20 leaders of these powerful countries, and have a look at the people there getting ready for a joint photo, maybe, who would they think was in charge? And I think they'd think Trump was. Oh, yeah, he's obviously the boss. And others that work for him. Yeah, possibly just because of his manner, something to do with the way they react to him. I'm thinking particularly of, you know, the little boy, what's that little boy called? Macron, you know, the new president of France.
Macron, yeah.
I think he's 12, isn't he?
Emmanuel 12, Macron.
11 or 12 years old.
I think he's aged about 50 years in the last few weeks.
But as they were getting ready for the photo, pushed his way to the front to go and stand next to Trump, who he'd been criticizing.
Not very diplomatic.
He'd been criticizing when he wasn't there. But when he was there, it's all smiles. And he looks like, just looking at the interpersonal interaction there, it just looked like he was being totally dominated in that social situation by Trump. So, yeah, he comes across very well in that. So in terms of diplomacy, what does that mean? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're being successful. It means you're successful for the audience, but that doesn't mean you'll be successful with the person you're trying to persuade. Proverbs 25, verse 15 says, by forbearance a ruler may be persuaded. A soft tongue breaks the bone. So if someone is in charge of a nation and you want to persuade them, the fact that you come over as more dominant than them doesn't persuade them. You know, if you came across as someone who really felt that they were their equal, whether or not you really believed it, if you came across like that, you'd be more likely to be able to persuade them, I think. So I'm not sure that this tremendous overconfidence that Trump has doesn't necessarily help him. Now, Putin has the same issue. Not in the same way. He's a little nerdy-looking chap who keeps, fiddles with his hands as he's sitting there. He looks like he's very distracted. But he also looks like he's fiddling with his fingers because they're not actually on the trigger of the gun that's hidden under. You know,
no.
He looks like...
Or ready to strangle you.
He looks like, he's a bit... He could kill you. He's just decided not to at that moment. So I think both Trump and Putin have this manner where you think you're nervous of them and other people are nervous of them, partly because they're such powerful countries they're in charge of, but also just their actual personality. And I don't know that helps them diplomatically. It might do. It does in terms of looking good to your home audience, but not necessarily in terms of persuading people to do things your way.
Yes. So what have we learned by this? Well, I'm just going to summarize it here from all the things that you said. And I just think maybe this is some of the things that if you're a diplomat and you're trying to deal with these individuals, maybe even taking a leaf out of the books of Vladimir Putin and possibly even Donald Trump. But this is a little poem called Devilish Diplomacy. Now, dear delegation, the process of negotiation brings procrastination and can be the bane of every party. So start the meeting, whether long or fleeting, and let's see who's the smarty. Firstly, if we can't agree to any measurable degree, then we will go into arbitration, become very civil despite all the drivel, and reduce the delegation. Secondly, with a long grievance list, I'll throw a fist, as well as kick up a frantic fuss, break every rule, act like a fool, giving us more to discuss. Thirdly, I'll be a bore and just recite the law, spouting points in legislation, accuse you of libel, even quote the Bible, to destroy your reputation. Going forth, when full of rage and at the exasperated stage, you will want to throttle my throat. To right the wrongs where blame belongs, I'll write you a stupid note. Finally, if you take your leave, I will obstinately believe you were the awkward absentee. But even on my own, I'll negotiate all alone and still strongly disagree. Yours, the undiplomatic diplomat. So there you go. Be as awkward as you possibly can, and maybe you just might get your way. Well, we look forward to the next G20 summit, or any other summit for that matter, where our great leaders once again all converge just to waffle, build a lot of hot air, and increase the climate temperature once more. So, listeners, what do you think? Do you think anything came of the G20 summit? Did we actually achieve anything? What's your answer to diplomacy? Well, why not follow us at Mark and Pete on Twitter? And we would love to hear from you, from some of your thoughts on diplomatic etiquette. Join us again next time for colourful conversations with Mark and Pete.